Welcome to The Culture of Leadership. We have conversations that help you develop and become a more confident leader. Today's conversation is Mark interviewing me on what I see as the top three leadership challenges in 2023. We set the scene through the lens of change and how the best leaders aren't just going through the motions. To tackle these top three challenges, leaders must be deliberate in solving them. They won't magically solve themselves. Are your top three challenges similar to what I think? Stay tuned to find out. This is the Culture of Leadership podcast. I'm Brendan Rogers. Enjoy the conversation.
What are the things that they can take away from this and say, all right, I've learned something. I'm a leader in an industry, or I'm an aspiring leader in my industry, and I've had to shift the way I work. What would be the most important thing for people to take away from that?
I think the first thing to mention in what you've talked about there is that word, dreaded word, change. And that dreaded word, COVID, forced change. And that's the thing that organizations, workers going into an office was common practice for a lot of types of work. And COVID was that burning bridge that said, we have to change something. We're forced to change something. So that therefore gave opportunities for people to work remotely when those conversations weren't being had or those conversations didn't want to be had because it was in the too hard basket.
Yeah.
To me, that's a real lesson in itself because it's sort of people going through the motions, and leaders shouldn't go through the motions. Yeah, when you find something that works and you stick with it, but you're always looking at, there's always ways to improve stuff. So change, that burning bridge, COVID was the burning bridge, and it forced organizations, leaders, people working in organizations to think differently. They had no choice, right? If you didn't think differently, you'd probably close down and you didn't come back. Or you did close down, you have so much cash reserves, which most businesses don't, and they came back when the dust settled, but who knew when the dust settled? So that's the first thing. But I think for me and the conversations I'm having, granted my client base is Australia, I don't venture out of that from a face-to-face consulting perspective, there's things that come up regularly, and I've boiled those down to three things, which for me are the challenges for leaders in 2023. But it's not just Australia. We're involved in various groups. We know people from all around the world, and LinkedIn's a great tool. We know that. There's stuff happening on LinkedIn from people in various countries. The same challenges are happening across the board. There's organizations out there that have been remote work since they started. We're not talking about those sort of environments because they've got their systems in place. COVID, no COVID, doesn't matter. They're just working through. So we're talking about organizations that had a way of working, like you said, predominantly coming into the office or coming into a place of work, and that got changed abruptly. And fundamentally, now going back to change and going back to going through the motions, what I'm seeing and the conversations I'm having is that there's an element of organizations and leaders just going through the motions again. What I mean by that is that people are doing some work from home still, a lot of work from home still, come into the office every now and again, working from home, come into the office again when they feel like it. There's no structure to it. There's no deliberacy around it. So for me, that is the greatest challenge for 2023 moving forward for leaders. If leaders don't get deliberate about having conversations around what is our work environment going to look like in 2023 and beyond, that's a real strategic type conversation. Well, they're just going to be going through the motions. And workers don't like organizations going through the motions. They want to progress. They want to move forward. If they feel like they're just part of something that's just bubbling along without any deliberacy, then they'll probably go somewhere else where they can get deliberate around stuff and they've got some real plan around what their work environment looks like. I know that I'm going to be required in the office X days, or I know that I'm going to be able to work from home X days, or I know I can do it fully from home, or I know I'm going to have to be coming into the office all the time. Then they're able to make deliberate choices themselves about, this is an environment I want to work in and I can do the best that I can.
So one of the big questions then is that whole new model for the upcoming year, especially at the beginning of the year when you probably need to set some new standards and some role. You know, you're probably having to establish what the goals are for the year. There's going to be some financial goals, some strategic goals. Usually that's a time that a lot of those things get implemented. There's going to be probably a number of leaders who are not sure what would be the steps that they would need to think about. What would be some examples of steps that would be appropriate to start with? You know, and should it be conversations with the staff? Should they be doing a survey? What kind of things could they be doing?
If it was me and the sort of advice I give to leaders that I'm having conversations with, and even if I post something on LinkedIn or whatever, then it really starts with that word deliberate. We have to be deliberate about wanting to solve the problem. What's the problem? Well, the problem could be just categorized as we need to get deliberate about what our work environment looks like moving forward. We've got this thing that's a bit all over the shop. We're not clear on it. Our people aren't clear on it, but we're just moving along with it. So what does our work environment look like into the future? And when we say into the future, I mean, that's could be years. That could be till the next COVID outbreak or the next pandemic. It's going to happen at some point, right? So being deliberate about wanting to answer that question, wanting to solve that problem is absolutely the first step.
What does that look like?
What does it look like? What's the problem you're trying to solve? The problem I'm trying to solve is we want to know what our work environment looks like. Are we going to be hybrid work environment? Are we going to have a bit of a mix of work from home, work from office? Are we going to be full office? Are we going to be full remote? What does that look like depending on the size of the organization? Well, if you're a large organization and you've got a leadership team, i.e. senior leadership team, that conversation needs to start there. I'm not going to sit here and say that the conversation starts and ends there. Absolutely not. It's a broader conversation. But the senior leadership team is responsible for the trajectory of the organization, have roles accordingly. They have to have that conversation there. If you're a small business that has a handful of staff, you know, maybe up to 10 staff, for example, then I would be encouraging that strategic type conversation to have with everybody. Not one-on-one, but as a team, in a meeting room. Okay, this, lay the foundation. We've been working like this for some time, and I know it's not very clear as to what we, and as an organization, we need to change that, because for us to thrive, for us to move forward, and to give our workers some respect of what the environment looks like moving forward so they can continue to make good decisions and for the benefit of the business, we've got to get clear around this. Everyone's got to be on the same page with that. Okay, what does that start to look like? Okay, what are our ideas around what our environment could look like moving forward? Again, the obvious ones I mentioned, you know, do we go to full remote and be deliberate about that? Do we just bring everyone back into the office and be deliberate about that? Do we say, look, we think there's a really good option of 4 days in the office, 1 day remote, or completely the other way, 1 day in the office, 4 days remote? That's the sort of conversations that need to be had. Again, not necessarily decisions made on that yet, but you're throwing out some ideas. Then from there, well, the next stage is really start to activate some of those ideas, discern some of those ideas, play devil's advocate, if you will. If we did this, how would that work in the environment? Why do you think this would be a better solution than this solution? Are there areas of the organization, if we're talking large organizations, that this is more appropriate for or this is more appropriate for? Because we've also, I'm a believer in, it's not an all or nothing scenario. If we've got a big organization, and let's say that big organization is 100 people, 1,000 people, 5,000 people, the greater the size of the organization, the more likely that the vanilla one way doesn't work for everyone, or every department, I should say. It doesn't work for every department. So those conversations need to be had. Again, depending on the way the communication works in the organization, then that can be structured in certain ways. I'm not a survey sort of guy. You mentioned they are very valuable for certain things, but I think with these sort of stuff, then having face-to-face conversations, you don't need to have it with everyone if you're talking to, you know, a very, very large organization, but key parts of the organization, key representatives from the organization, and you can start to get a feel for that. And it might be putting out scenarios. This is one option we're looking at. This is another option. How would this impact your environment, and having those conversations? And then from there, what are we going to do? What's the action? What are we deciding to do as a result of this? Again, don't take it that that simple process is going to solve the world in one or two conversations or a few meetings. It's a trial and error situation, isn't it? What we might think is working, we've done all the best conversational type investigation with key stakeholders, maybe it still may not work. the theory might sound sound, but in practice, sometimes it's not always the way it works. And if that's the case, what's not working? Come back to a conversation. What is it about this is not working? What do we need to change that might make this work better? The worst thing you can do is say, it's not working. Let's throw all that away and let's start again. Organizations should never do that. And organizations that are in, I guess, product development type environments, they don't do that, right? They make prototypes and they adjust the prototype. They get some feedback and then they adjust. They hardly ever would they just throw it all in the bin and start from scratch again. There's going to be elements of it that work. And the same with this. It's like prototyping the situation. And that's why there's no one size fits all. Like, I can't sit here, Mark, and say to our audience that this is a solution. You all need to get back to work, or you all need to go remote, or no, the best thing you can do is 3 days a week remote, 2 days a week from office.
You can say you heard it here first that you're not Elon Musk.
Well, I am a believer that, and unfortunately I don't know Elon personally, but Elon, you don't get that sort of money at your disposal and be stupid, right? Yeah. He's a pretty smart fellow, I would say.
Yeah.
And I think with some of the decisions he's making, he's pretty smart. And probably the difference between him and people that don't have that sort of money, he's probably got the balls to match.
Yeah.
Like, he's just made a call and he said, this is one way that I can start to adjust my culture really quickly because time's money, get a message out there. I'm not saying I'm agreeing with the way it was done or whatever, but he's a smart guy. I'm sure there's some deliberacy to what he's done.
And I think a big part of it is that he, as a leader, is prepared to pay the price and understand it as an opportunity for learning and to make those adjustments, right? And, you know, you just look at
that's just- He's just taken responsibility,
exactly,
hasn't he?
Exactly.
He's put it out there and he's committed. He's not about trying to be everything to everyone, because that's often the worst thing you can do. But he said, this is what I think is best for this business moving forward. He's the owner. He's got his prerogatives to do that. And he's made a call. He knows some people are going to love him and some people are not going to like him at all.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's normal. And that's like that for any business that grows to any size. And to use that as an example from an industry perspective, I think is a good one. If you think about car manufacturing, you can go all the way back to the days of before Ford turned it into something where it was actually a production line. It's always something that you have to physically go on premises to do the work. You can't build a car, really, for the most part, in of itself, without being on premises. Except that nowadays, we're dealing with a workforce that's very technology-driven. And if there's a car that's technology-driven, that's a good example of a technology-driven car in terms of not how it, you know, how it drives, but how, although that's also how it drives, but it's also how it's designed. So that has an impact in terms of that. What's happened in societies, we've moved more and more and more towards the capacity to do certain tasks in a remote fashion. So that opportunity changes the scope. And as I'd mentioned before, you know, again, prior to starting recording, is that I had experienced what remote work was like for a lot of people for a long period of time. I was one of those people who was not surprised and somewhat knew what to do. And fortunately was in a work environment where, being self-employed as I am, I can do that. And it wasn't a major shift. In fact, very little as far as that goes, with the exception of obviously not being able to go on premises to do, you know, commercial photography. Obviously, you have to be on premise to shoot the place, right?
It helps.
But it helps. But that's that whole thing of knowing that exactly. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is that it's understanding how much of the work has no other choice but to be done on premise or not. And then there's that variation of, okay, now that it doesn't have to be done on premise, what are the benefits of it still being done on premise? What are the gains and losses? What do the stakeholders' advantages and disadvantages look like, right? Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, because I think that's part of that next stage of deciding the how's it going, the measuring of the shift in the culture that managers have to make.
Yeah, I would go back to the process that I explained a little bit earlier, in that they're the sort of questions that, if that's relevant to the industry you're in and the environment you're in, you have to ask yourself as part of trying to get the best outcome. Because who goes into a conversation or some problem-solving session like this or any trying to get a bad outcome? They don't. they may not always consider all of the scenarios and all of the questions that need to be asked, which is why it's important to have the right people in the room around various conversations. And in something like this, absolutely. So it's really about saying, well, our environment is X. This is what it was pre-COVID. This is the impact of COVID. Pretty simple, pretty black and white. And this is where we're at today. Where we're at today, is that the best thing for the business? Is that the best thing for the environment? Are we actually working better from a cultural perspective, which can drive improved performance? Is that better now than what it was before? Maybe, maybe not. I would even say, even if it's not, doesn't mean that you say, well, back in the office. Because my experience in a smaller scale around the clients that I work with is that a lot of that comes back to the leadership capability to manage remotely or to manage a more hybrid-driven workforce. So that's all I would say for that. I don't think it's right for me to sit there and say, here's the scenario and this is what it looks like. It comes back to that famous thing of questions and listening. That famous thing for leaders is pretty important. It's actually one of the most important things we can do. Let's ask questions. Let's listen. Let's ask some questions off the back of that. Let's listen. And if we're interested enough and seeking to understand enough, then we'll get to a level where some confident and competent decisions can be made. And that is just going to look different for every business. And I would even say, even if you're in, you're in a service type environment, you may be an accountancy business in a service type environment. Well, just because you're in the same industry doing similar services, you've got a different culture as well. So how you operate remotely versus in office can be different. So it could mean that just because two businesses are in the same industry and doing the same stuff doesn't mean that the solution should be the same for those two businesses. Because once again, one could have a very, very competent leader today who is good and has adjusted themselves to manage in a hybrid type environment, and the other one hasn't yet learnt how to do that. It's not that they can't, they just haven't yet learnt how to do that, and they haven't sought the right help, or they haven't educated themselves in a way that is starting to move themselves forward. So many factors can impact this, but ultimately leadership is a big driver of what culture looks like in an organisation and how the business is fundamentally being run and being driven, and what the people think of the organization as well.
This is obviously going to have an impact on who wants to be the followers in the group, right? The staff, right? Because we were somewhat joking about the whole issue of how leaders need followers, right? Otherwise, how do you have leaders? You still have to have that. And really that what that is often their staff or their team. And yes, you want to have the right people on the bus, as is said. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to want to leave. Some people are going to stay. And I think that maybe thinking in terms of the impact that it's going to have in terms of the change of the staffing and who it'll attract and what opportunities does the model bring, both the in-office, in-house, or hybrid, or fully remote, what does it attract? Maybe talking about that would be a good thing, because I think that that's one of the things we really want people to think about is who are you actually going to be impacting, and how will it either bring new people, bring new blood into the organization, or possibly create a shift, hopefully a positive one.
Once again, this is one of the challenges for me in 2023 for leaders. It's a challenge now, staffing, getting the right people, getting what is deemed as good people for that organization. Because good for one organization doesn't actually necessarily mean good for another organization. That's very dependent on what they value from a behavioral perspective, especially. But if you're looking at that, the ability for the leader to know what they're looking for in people, the ability, going back to point one about what the work environment looks like, really important to have clarity around that, being deliberate about what that looks like. There's just a couple of factors. If you've got that even as a starting point, then people will either be attracted to that because this is the sort of environment that I want to be involved in. This is the sort of purpose that this organization lives for and demonstrates, and I want to be part of that. Or it could be as shallow as they are fully a full remote organization. I want to work for a full remote organization. Or it's 3 days in office or 3 days out of office, whatever. Okay. Again, if an organization's not clear around that, how can they sell themselves to new people? In Australia, unemployment's very, very low. I know in other countries, unemployment's very, very low. Also in other countries and Australia, they talk a lot about, you know, the great resignation and the quiet quittings come in, all that sort of stuff. Once again, I'm a massive believer. I've never, ever met a person that has left an organization because they love their leader. Now, I'm not saying that people will leave or won't leave organizations because their leader is so great. There's other development opportunities they want to take up, whatever. I get that. But they will think a lot harder and for a lot longer around, hey, this is a really good environment. I really respect, I follow my leader respectfully. I'm not following them reluctantly because they're in a role of power, of superiority. Then people just generally don't do that. So if leaders are leading people in a way that people feel valued and cared for, they are very unlikely to leave. That is just fact. The research says it. It's factual. I look at my own experiences and I've left organizations because leaders are not leading. And people would have left me, absolutely, because I've not been the leader that I thought I should have been or could have been or would have been. And hopefully every day I get better and better at that. The whole staffing thing, finding good people are out there. We know that. Great people are out there. People aren't really selling the organization and they're not understanding what works for their organization as well as they could. Frustrated leaders over the time said to me, this remote thing doesn't work. We just got to bring everyone back in office. And I don't say no to that. All I say is, how many staff are you prepared to lose?
It's a question you ask.
Absolutely. How many staff are you prepared to lose? And pretty much the answer is, I generally don't want to lose any staff. Sometimes there's, I could lose one or two of the bad ones, but that's another topic. Generally, they don't want to lose people. Well, if you make a decision like that, I guarantee there's a chance of you of having a reasonable percentage of your staff leave. Maybe not immediately, but over time, it will have an impact. Why? Because people expect what has been happening for the last 2.5-3 years. It's not an added bonus now, this work from home stuff or work out of office stuff, whatever you want to call it. It's just a common practice. It's the new standard. Now, again, not necessarily for every industry. It doesn't work. Manufacturing might be one of them. Warehousing might be one of them as well. But for a lot, it can work. We've just had a head in the sands and not needing to have that conversation. Once again, COVID's brought that conversation to a fore. We're well and truly down that path. It is the new standard. How do organizations embrace that new standard, whatever it looks like for their organization? Back to challenge one, the number one thing from now, if leaders have not decided, and when I say decided, generally some sort of engagement with parts of the team or the size of the team, but if a fundamental decision has not been made about what our work environment looks like in the future, you need to do that. Because then when you do that, then you can start to sell yourself as an organization of what that environment's looking like for people. And people in the environment today can make decisions as well as to what works for them and is this a long-term environment for us? That's the sort of thing that has to happen.
It's interesting because that brings in the whole issue of, what makes people feel like it's the right place for them. And often, I'm sure you've experienced it, and I have many, many times, is that along with leadership, and I say along with because it's not necessarily their role, because as you know, I spent many years also in the training industry. It's not the role of the leader to do the training all of the time, but they should be able to. But when they are bringing in a training team or involving education or development, then they're doing it in unison or in congruence with the model that they're working under. Most of the time, training, if it's especially communications-based training, does benefit from being in person for the most part. You get the body language. There's so much more that you can learn from. And you also get the cooler talk that takes place between sessions and that kind of thing too. So really, I see this as a shift towards whatever new model gets agreed on and focused on as a great foundation for developing the training programs or the upskilling or the self-development programs that can be implemented within an organization so that they can do all of the things that they need in terms of whether it be just the functional aspects or for that matter, the training of the next layer of leaders. You probably have seen and experienced this, is that some of the best leaders that I've worked for, and you've probably also, are the ones who thought of you in a succession plan way of hiring. So they hire with the intent of, would I want to have this person take my role? If I had to step down, would I be happy to work for them? And how do I ensure that they've actually got what it takes to add value to the organization in that way? So training that next layer of leaders. So what are your thoughts in terms of how to implement that? How to bring that in as part of an important element in the coming year? Because it's going to be one of those things that people have to eventually get to the point where, okay, we've got the new strategy, we've got the new hours of operation when you're in the office and all that. We've got the right people on the bus. Now we want to make sure that they're getting better.
There's two parts I want to touch on. I guess the first one, just to park, so we don't forget, is the human systems of a business. And human systems are only able to be implemented in a way that works for the business when decisions around how the business, how the environment is going to work, down to values and how we behave and what we value, all that sort of stuff in the organization, human systems have to come off the back of that. Okay, so I can unpack that a little bit more. But one of the points you just mentioned in the end about succession planning, I think we've got to be really, really careful around succession planning in my book, is that often when we're talking about succession planning, we're talking about it in exactly the way that you refer to. You know, it's what's the next move? What's the succession of this person? And would you like to take my role? How do we build you into that? And that's fantastic. That's a key element of succession planning, without a doubt. But the reality is there are people, and we want people to not be looking at succession in that frame. Succession to me also is, how do I be so good in my role? How do I be better in my role? That's an element of succession. If I'm here today, well, my succession plan is, how do I even be better tomorrow?
It's almost like being a better follower.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A better employee. How do I add more value to the organization? How can I do that? And people that are engaged, and all these great words that we use in the leadership spaces, important words, but maybe overused at sometimes, that they're looking to do that. And again, the research says it's pretty clear that those that feel like they're getting more out of, i.e. they're learning and they're growing and they're developing in their role, whatever that looks like for them, whether that's moving up, moving sideways, enhancing their current role, they will stay a long time in organizations as well. Their needs are being met. I just want to clarify that point. I don't want people to think succession is always up. Yes, it is up, but it doesn't necessarily mean up into another level of leadership or moving from an individual contributor role, let's say. I must move into a leadership role, i.e. I must have some followers or leading a team or whatever that looks like. Okay. So just being clear on that. The human processes side, again, absolutely fundamental. It's a bit of the stuff I refer back to. How can an organization sell themselves? And when I say sell themselves, how can they put it out there if you're used to putting job adverts out there, let's say, and there's various ways to do that in better ways than what's standard today. But if you don't know what your organization values, if you don't know what your work environment in your organization looks like, if you don't know the technical skills, that's a real simple stuff, really, normally. If we don't know the technical skills, how can you put this stuff out there in a way that somebody finds it and is attracted to the organization? Again, people get more attracted to that why, the Simon Sinek, why are we doing what we do? That's that emotional attachment side. So that clarity around those sorts of things, again, you got to be deliberate. Wow, there's that word again. This isn't difficult stuff. It can be time consuming because you've got to put deliberate time in. You've got to have deliberate conversations. You don't just solve things in 5 seconds around this sort of stuff. You've got to go through a process and really talk it through to really get to the bottom of why do we do what we do, or what are these behaviors that we really value, filtering our decisions through things. You might test that and stress test it over a period of time and come back to it. But when you've got that level of clarity, well, actually, you're not having, generally, I find, to attract people, they're attracted to you. Why? Because bloody hell, most organizations don't do that. So you actually stand above the rest really easily. Even if you've got 50% of that clarity, you stand ahead of the others. And then all it is say, well, if that's recruitment, if that's how we're attracting people, how people are attracted to us, how do we bring that into our recruitment systems, i.e. our human systems? How do we put that in? And I'm not a fan of hundreds of pages policies or anything like that. It might be just a one page or three or four bullet points of the key things of this is how we operate here. You know, here's a checklist of this is how we run our interview process here, and hopefully not too standard interview, interview 30 minutes, yeah, you're hired or not, and whatever, getting to know and relating your investigation of that person and their fit of the organization, but and your fit of them, how that works through questioning, through unpacking different scenarios. Well, again, all that can only happen if there's a level of clarity at the top end around, well, what do we value in this organization from a behavioral perspective? That's where the human processes come in. Super important, absolutely. But if you think how most organizations seem to work, certainly ones I've been involved in for a long time from an employee side, is there's not that level of clarity with the left hand, but then you're getting the right hand, which is normally HR, good, bad, or ugly, to try and write some human processes. It's just a complete misalignment. And they wonder why they're attracting people that don't always fit. It's like Russian roulette. It's like spin the dice and hopefully we get a good one. A lot of the time you might, a lot of the time you may not. And it's always the person's fault.
Yeah. Oh,
it's always the person coming in's fault. Often the time, well, you've sold them an organization that's actually not what they're not clear about who they are anyway. So how could I get clear about I'm really going to like this organization? Let's face it, most people need money to live. Most people don't have enough money to not work. So, you know, that's going to be a bit of a driver. So they'll take it and then they'll realize fit's not there. I'm not really enjoying this. I'm not enjoying the role. Expectation a bit different to what I had. And they start looking and they quite quit, like they're saying. They don't necessarily give you the real feedback. They tell their friends the real reason why they left, because Brendan's a tosser to work for, or Mark's just a pain in the ass and I just couldn't handle it anymore. I really like my colleagues, but I can't stand Brendan or I can't stand Mark and they impact my life every day. So I'll go somewhere else. And there's enough opportunities out there in the world to find jobs, right?
Especially right now. And absolutely, that's one of the things that if there's anything that I think we've noticed in the world of retention, is it's far shorter than it's ever been. Turnover is amazingly rampant. It was a time when...
It'd be interesting to know the numbers on that sort of stuff nowadays. Yeah. I don't know what they are, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that kills a business is when, if you actually look at how little retention an organization has as an employee or as someone looking for work or looking to make that change or to become an employee, if you don't actually have a high level of retention in the organization, what does that say about the organization as a whole? It's funny because I just come back from speaking at the Zoho conference, and one of the things that everyone that works for Zoho, for the most part, especially the ones that come from India, they all talk about the fact that they've been there for 7, 8, 10, 12, 13, 14 years in a tech company that hasn't been, well, that started in the late 2000s roughly, which is a long period of time. They have high retention and it's an unusual thing, and that makes them attractive to work for. They actually probably are one of those few organizations that have that success because of that. Other reasons too, I'm sure, but that's an example of that. So I think about how leaders can think in terms of what are they offering in terms of that development program that demonstrates that it's worth sticking around, so that, you know, that upskilling that's going to take place, that becomes the carrot or the opportunity or the reason to stick around for a little longer, even when things don't go right. Because I think that, you know, as you mentioned earlier on, that you know, with the whole thing of being deliberate, every time you said the word, it made me think about the other version of exactly the same word, which is to deliberate, right? You have to have a deep conversation. You have to deliberate about what you were deliberate about and work through whether or not the shifts or the changes were in fact correct through good measure. And then by making those adjustments and demonstrating to the team that you are aware of your successes and your failings, that in of itself, I think, is one of those things that creates a higher level of retention. So it's really, you know, developing your team and developing yourself as a leader, I think, is one of those things where you, that feedback model of, usually it's a good, when the business is doing well, not just in financial numbers, but also in sort of, call it a happiness index of the staff, as much as it is the customers, I think it's a really good indication of where you're going.
Yeah, retention, I think it's like any measure, right? There's context that has to be added to the measure. I think as a basic rule, retention as a measure is a good measure. That's my belief. When's a time when it may not be a great measure? Well, in today's environment, in Australia specifically, very, very low unemployment rate, it's probably a good measure, right? Because it's not that difficult for good people to get a job. In times of higher unemployment and people are a little bit more risk averse and scared at changing things, I think retention can be one of those measures that still may be okay, but there's other context that needs to be considered.
Absolutely. Right? Well said.
And there's other factors. You know, pay can come into that. Again, I'm a big believer, and I know you know this, that finance is a very, very short-term motivator. So, you know, earning a lot of money generally means you spend a lot of money. You live to your means, and you might get that extra $5,000 bonus or $5,000 increase for the year or whatever, but the niceness, the warm, fuzzy feel of that wears off a bit, especially if you're working in a crap environment, the culture's not aligned with your beliefs, the leadership, the people that you're supposedly looking up to and they're there to help and support you isn't competent. Those sorts of things are the bigger factors in the long term than finance. So yeah, retention is
it's an interesting one. Yeah.
It's a really good measure most of the time, I think. But there's always context that can change that.
Yeah. And one that could easily be misunderstood very easily. Yeah.
I think it's data, right? I mean, we can present data.
Oh.
I love data, but it can be presented in any number of ways and you can snip it from here to here to make anything look the way that, you know, the narrative you wanting to get across at any given time. So, you know, again, that sort of stuff can come in the power of questions and listening and questions and listening and trying to seek to understand and get to the bottom of situations and then putting the context around it. And from that, hopefully some reasonable decisions get made about whatever is being decided, whatever action needs to take moving forward.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting year, 2023. It'll be a very telling year on many, many fronts. We've got so much going on in the world. You mentioned how you're playing around now with a new AI tool as part of your toolkit set for writing blogs. That's coming into play. That's going to create a level of displacement to some degree. All right, we've got the world of AR and VR, which is still growing. And yes, it's slowing down in some areas. Some people are seeing how Meta is maybe not doing as well as it used to be. And Mark Zuckerberg is basically being caught in the weeds of the Meta world. But I think that all of these things we're going to be getting an awful lot more clarity as to what the next 7 to 10 years are going to look like as a result of, I think, next year. I think it's going to be a year to not just plan and do all these other things, but to be very aware, to just raise our level of awareness. And conversations like what you and I are having now and the conversations that you'll be having, I'm looking forward to, with your guests over the next coming years. I know that you've got a couple of people already lined up.
We've got a jam-packed schedule for Q1 2023.
It's quite a bit. So with that coming into play, I think there's going to be that opportunity for people to listen up, find out how we can maybe dig a little deeper on the three key topics, you know, to sort of recap a little bit more. You know, today was more about where do people work? Is it that whole thing? You know,
it's the environment.
Yeah.
So really to summarize, it's getting deliberate about what your work environment looks like.
Yeah.
Particularly obviously in relation to work from home, work from office, hybrid situation, what that looks like. And the context, the nuance of that is dependent on what works in your environment. You know, there's no one size fits all.
Yeah.
Okay. That's one.
And then next obviously was the people.
Absolutely. The staffing, the finding good people. The learning how to find good people, good in respect to what works for your organization, what you're looking for, absolutely critical.
And then finally, it's the ideas in the thinking and the upskilling. As you know, upskilling is a good word for it, but it's that whole thing about education and training, self-development.
It's what I would call leadership competence. There's a lot of technical competence in the workforce, very, very good technical competence, very, very smart people, fantastic. It's the leadership competence we're talking about. Again, what I'm seeing, the conversations I'm having, refer back to point one about the sort of environment, being deliberate about strategic intent of what our environment needs to look like moving forward, how to attract good people and the employment side of things, the hiring and retaining good people, retention of good people, all that sort of stuff. That happens far better if the leader has a level of competence about their leadership. So being aware, you mentioned the word aware, awareness of, hey, I know this is not as good as what it could be. I know that I can be a better leader. I just don't know how to be a better leader. okay, well, if you don't have the awareness, you won't even start to seek information out to try and help you. It might be just a book. God knows there's hundreds of thousands of them out there, all very good, mind you, but so much content out there, it's not funny. It might be a YouTube channel. Could be our YouTube channel, but search whatever you're looking for on YouTube and it'll come up. You can watch a video, and if that's one thing that you want to work on for a week or a month or whatever, then do it. But that's the awareness you've got to have. If leaders, again, probably shouldn't use the word leader if they're not always looking to develop themselves. If they're a person who's leading people and they're not looking at developing themselves, then they shouldn't be leading.
That's a manager.
Yeah, yeah. Well, probably, but so let's just assume that people who are considered themselves leaders, they're always looking to evolve and develop and improve themselves. So upskilling, super important. They do that and they're always on that wheel of improvement, self-mastery, continuous improvement. Then points one and two will start to fall in place. And there'll be so many other things that will start to fall in place, whether that's, you know, how they manage change in an organization, which is a constant, how they run their various types of meetings that they have. We've touched on strategic type meetings today, but it could be a one-on-one performance type meeting. It could be a one-on-one learning and development type meeting. It could be a tactical meeting with the team, looking at the operational functions week to week around the performance of the team side of things. It might be a project management related meeting. There's so many different types of meetings, but all of those sort of things, if you're not really clear on what that should be or how that should work, and you're just reacting to situations, then that's not showing very good leadership competence in my book. Leaders don't have to be reactive. In fact, the best leaders aren't reactive. They're very proactive. They know when they come in each day, each week, each month, they're seeing, for want of a better word, seeing the future. They've got their eye on the future. And whether that be succession planning of, you know, trying to help their people grow and develop into other roles or even be better at their current role themselves, succeeding, what that looks like for them, the organization as a whole, the teams, the product for their customers, all that sort of stuff. They've got their eye on those, you know, on all of those balls. They're not necessarily doing that all the time. They're not necessarily responsible for that. They have other people in positions doing that. But if they've got their eye on those things and they're considering those things and they're developing their leadership competence, which is fundamentally will make a significant difference to the quality of the organization, the quality of the people in the organization, and the quality of the output, whatever that looks like for customers.
It's going to be an interesting year, 2023.
For us, it's going to be super.
Yeah.
We have a super year planned, not only for the podcast, but for some of the online learning we've got under development at the moment, some of the systems, some of the signature frameworks, all that sort of stuff. But some of the speaking stuff we're going to be doing and more of this sort of stuff as well. Well, I think we really only did our key takeaways for the year, our top key takeaways for the year last year, and we're going to be doing that again this year. But there's lots of exciting stuff to go, and hopefully our focus is definitely to help create confident leaders. We're very much focused on that. So hopefully we keep moving on that path and achieve that in 2023 and moving forward, always with that lens. What can we do? What conversations can we have? What resources can we develop to help create confident leaders?
Well done.
Thank you, mate. It's always a pleasure sitting down and having a conversation with you.
Same here.
Thanks for listening to The Culture of Leadership. You can access the show notes at theculturofleadership.com. If you enjoy the show, please follow, rate, and give a review on your favorite podcast platform.